Hello, hello, hello! Is this the end of Spanish dominance as Brazil win the Confederations Cup? The David Moyes era begins at Manchester United, 10 years of Roman Abramovich at Chelsea, Spurs competing in the English Premier League, Josie Altidore and Freddie Adunuz, this and much more podcast shenanigans from the Londoner and Addison, we're on the ball. Hello, hello, hello. Good morning. This is the On The Ball Soccer Podcast. I'm here with Producer Gio. How are you doing, Producer Gio?
I'm doing well, Jake. Thank you.
I'm here with Kevin Camacho. How are you doing, Kevin?
Good. I'm finally recovering from 4th of July, but we'll get into that later.
Mark, may I say how are you doing, Mark?
How are you doing, Mark? Doing great.
You're doing good?
Yes.
Yes.
Got the coffee, got the Sambuca. I'm happy.
And we're rolling. How was your guys' 4th of July?
I'll take off. It was a good celebration of America. It was just a pool party, fireworks, and drinking to excess. What can we say?
And Mark was pretty excited, wasn't it, Mark? We were talking before the show started.
Yes. I went to my girlfriend and I were invited to the Montcrief Exotic Game Ranch. It's crazy, crazy huge. 20,000 acres west of Fort Worth in Weatherford, Aledo, Texas. Beautiful, beautiful place and very, very kind hosts. Wonderful people.
That's awesome. And I see you're supporting the colors of Manchester United today. So.
Absolutely.
Good for you.
Absolutely.
We'll get onto that in a second. First of all, Confederations Cup over. Would we say it's a good tournament overall?
Yes.
Looks good?
Absolutely.
Any highlights, particular highlights from either of you?
I tell you what, Tottenham bought themselves one hell of a player.
We'll get to Paulinho later, but Brazil are the standouts, obviously beating Spain by 3-0 that I think only Brad Namdar last week predicted. I certainly didn't predict Brazil to win. I'd been trashing them the whole month. Mm-hmm. We're impressed by them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Neymar, and it's still be seen who always going to perform in Europe, but in front of the crowd, and you could tell just going through it, the Brazilians just had the crowd behind them, and they were a different animal, playing differently, because I think if the Confederations Cup were in a different, outside of Brazil, the Brazilian fleet, because they've always had that skill, they're just kind of missing those one pieces that were coming together, and I think they're still missing, their back line can be a little weak at points, and they still gave up some bad decisions in the back line, but the crowd carried them through, but they're still, Spain still has no center back, and it was evident against Brazil where Neymar just ran rampant. So
have they peaked too early, Mark?
Brazil?
No.
The transition from that Brazil has done from the disciplined defense of Dunga to Scolari who was the coach for New York Giants that called the Big Tuna?
Parcells. Bill Parcells, yeah.
He is like Bill Parcells or Mike Ditka. Old school motherfucker.
He certainly gets the best out of his
Absolutely.
Players.
Absolutely. The guy is amazing. I tell you what, the center of that Brazil squad was exactly what carried it through. The scary part was when Navas came on for Spain. I was wondering what he was going to be able to do down that right side. Not much. He got through players, and that's what's going to be scary about City. But Brazil was fantastic. I actually had someone say that Spain threw it.
That they threw it?
Yes. And I said, but look at Madrid and look at Barcelona, what happened to them in the Champions League. Yeah. And she said, well, they threw that too. They were just tired of Spain winning everything.
Well, I think you make a good point about Paulinho in the center of the Brazilian midfield. They even miss him. We'll go on to Tottenham Hotspur later. Mm-hmm. Sandro, who plays most of the time for Brazil, he wasn't even there. Mm-hmm. obviously Fred played instead of Leandro Damião, so this is, it wasn't exactly a full strength.
No.
It was a strong Brazil team, but not a full strength.
And it does, it goes back to the point about Sandro, which I completely forgot to bring about. He's essentially the defensive midfielder,
yeah,
the power in the back. And I mean, we still saw Brazil punch Spain in the face and without Sandro. So you can just imagine how much their their center can be even better. So it's kind of a, it'll be interesting to see.
Moving on to Spain, is this the end of Spanish dominance? We touched on it at the first ever On the Ball podcast about Dortmund and Bayern Munich obviously beating Barcelona and Real Madrid. Is this the Spanish flag coming down the pole and it's a time for a new era, or is this just merely coincidence after a long season, especially for these European-based Spanish players?
I'd like to say that it's the Spanish flag descending because we've the rest of the world has realized how to play them. But a big part of it is, I think, Xavi. I said this last time I was on the cast. Xavi was their core, and the dude was tired at the end of last season. He was tired. I mean, really tired in Champions League. And it showed, and he's the mastermind. I think he's getting on in age, and the dude is exhausted. He's carried Barcelona for 3 years,
yeah,
and he carried Spain, and I think Spain is going to have to evolve a little bit. And you could see Torres seemed angry. Torres seemed angry or upset, unsatisfied. He fought a lot, but I think it was like that petulant, temperamental fight.
Yeah.
And I think that Spain probably has to evolve up front. They have to find somebody else to take over for him. They look good, but I think everybody else has figured out what...
They certainly have players coming through. I mean, maybe not in the... they have a few striking options in the Negredo and... I mean, David Villa, I suppose.
But David Villa's already 31,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. But David Villa is 31. Negredo's no spring chicken, might be going to Manchester City.
And especially if Spain, let's say Xavi does get pulled out, when is Spain going to run? They obviously can't do the whole midfield without Xavi running the show and pulling the strings. Who are they going to get to replace at 4-3-3 when they don't even have an attacking option?
It's funny that you mentioned Xavi about, I think he's 31 or 32, struggling, obviously, after playing all those games for Barcelona. Another leader, Puyol, always injured, didn't play in this Confederations Cup, maybe struggling for next year's World Cup.
Yep, that's why they're looking for somebody to play stopper other than Mascherano.
Yeah, that's true. Are Brazil favourites now? I mean, I get asked a lot about, I believe Gio asked me when I was writing for an online publication in England, and he asked me about the FIFA World Rankings one time. Well, Brazil are 24th. In the FIFA World Rankings, if people don't know, is a load of baloney.
Yeah.
And obviously being 24th in the world, well, they stuck it to Spain. Does this make Brazil favorites for the World Cup?
We have not seen what Belgium is going to do. We have not seen these guys play Germany. I think Germany is going
to
be...
the one to beat.
Yep.
We saw Italy with ageless Pirlo still making
right.
it too. I mean,
that's
they're
right.
still... I mean,
even the Netherlands, we saw in the under-21 tournament, great players coming
in
through.
Yeah.
I'll talk about one of their players as well coming to the Premier League.
Van Ginkel.
Van Ginkel with Chelsea. Quickly moving on here at the Londoner in Addison. David Moyes. The new era begins. Started on the 1st of July. So just under a week ago, or a week ago. If people don't know, Phil Neville and
Ryan Giggs.
Ryan Giggs is obviously a player coach. Phil Neville's retired and he's now going to be on the coaching staff, along with Paul Scholes and Nicky Butt. Oh,
no,
Paul Scholes has left.
No, Scholes has said that he's taken, I guess, a sabbatical.
He said it was announced today or yesterday. He wants to spend time with his family,
and that's certainly respectable.
Yeah.
But it's Ferguson has how many managers
that played under Fergie are in the
absolutely
we could do the Paul Lintzes, the Mark Hugheses,
it's just amazing,
Alex McLeish's, Steve Bruce's, we can go on and on and on. incredible record. But Moyes, what does he have to address as a Manchester United fan? What is it? And the new manager. I mean, he came out first press conference and said Wayne Rooney, not for sale.
Not for sale. And we'll see. We'll see what actually happens with that, because apparently Arsenal and Chelsea are still. What's being reported is that they are still thinking that they can go in, and if they put enough money down, that United will sell. I think he needs to, outside of handling the Rooney saga, he needs to take care of the center. He's looking at buying Alcantara from Barcelona.
Yeah, Thiago.
And that's an attacker. We got Zaha, attacker. We've got all these guys that are coming into the second season.
Oh, Kagawa. Yeah, even Kagawa.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. So all of these guys are attackers. We need somebody behind these guys.
We need a better replacement for Carrick and Cleverley. That's what you think. What you're thinking.
And Anderson.
And Anderson. And Fletcher obviously is having another operation, make or break operation.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, the guy, what, three seasons ago was player of the season.
Which, yeah, funny that Roy Keane was heavily critical of him in his last season, which obviously led to Roy Keane's dismissal from Manchester United. And there's been no one to replace Roy Keane since. Ideal replacement for midfield? If Moyes was going out for someone, who would you want to pick? I said Daniel De Rossi a few weeks ago on the podcast.
I would... You know, I thought about him, two seasons ago when we were looking at him. Yeah. The guy playing for Italy in the Confederations Cup was beautiful.
Yeah.
Stopped things from happening in the center. That one long sleeve, one short sleeve thing he's got going on.
Certainly, and he used to get a lot of red cards early on in his career. And he's kind of
But that's the age. That's the wisdom. That's, so now he's, that's the evolution.
Now
right.
He's later in his 20s.
I'd like to see someone that's maybe younger than he is. We need someone that's not just for this season, not just for next season, but for 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I mean, look at when Rio first came in, what he has done. And then Vidic was brought in and Evra, and 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we were the defense to beat.
Yeah, we were.
We are not that defense anymore. We need the next generation. And unfortunately, the academy players that we have aren't
the class of 1992 by any stretch of the imagination.
No. So we need to buy one or two that are going to be in the center, either a defensive mid and center backs. But we need two guys that are solid, that are probably 26, 25, that will be there the next 5 years to build the squad around in the back.
Outside of the center of midfield, £12 million bid for Leighton Baines. It's going to be up to 17 because it was rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Good signing or bad signing?
Yes, yes, yes. The guy, I read something about him. He, behind... I don't remember who the other player was, but he is second in the top 5 European divisions in plays created. Leighton Baines.
Wow.
Top 5 leagues in Europe. He is second between... he's second behind another player in most plays created.
Wow.
So he's creative, he's fast, he can be utilized as an attacker and a defender, and he's great. And that's why he's fighting Ashley Cole. And it's only because Ashley Cole has been the player that he has that Baines hasn't gotten more time, more caps. So that's saying a lot. The guy's hot. I'd love for him to come in, but we'd have to get rid of Butner.
The talk is Patrice Evra might be going back to Monaco.
Monaco.
Where obviously Manchester United bought him from for, I think, £5.5 million, which was... Looking back now, is incredibly good value for money. Quick transfer rumor: Nani might be going to Roma in Serie A. So long, Nani. We happy he's leaving?
I think it's a good time for him to leave. I think he was frustrated, although he was player of the season 2 seasons ago. I think he was frustrated last year, and he unfortunately did not evolve the way that
Cristiano did.
Everybody hoped he would. Yeah. So, you know.
I mean, early on the season, obviously, he was early on in his career at Manchester United. He was in the shadow of Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously another Sporting Lisbon winger. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite come off that way. Quick transfer fee, what would you accept for it if you were David Moyes? Above 10 million, below 10 million? Mm. He is, I believe he's 27, 26 maybe? So he's still in his prime.
I'd say probably any 9 to 12. I mean, just to get him off the books, because I think his wage was relatively high also. Yeah. So I'd try and get him off the books, get him moving, because Zaha is going to want to playing time. I mean, there's a lot of young guys that are behind him trying to get on the pitch. I mean, they're talking about Norwich getting Nick Powell on loan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see him get some time with us, but get him playing time, get him pitch time, so he'll mature. He's still young. But Nani, Nani and Anderson, I think it's good time for them to move on, because they are not going to be anything more than squad players, second or third choices, unfortunately. But
it'll be difficult to recoup the money, I guess, for either of them. I think we're
right.
20 million each
Anderson,
at the time.
Yeah, Anderson, I mean, was crazy.
And I mean, it looks like on Anderson's resume that he did wonders. First season, him and Nani's first season, mm-hmm. It was the Champions League, obviously winning the year in 2008. Mm-hmm. But I guess they flattered to deceive, really, in terms of their potential. Kevin, have you got, from an outsider's perspective, on Manchester United?
Well, he's wearing the right colours.
He is. He is. what's your feeling on Manchester United and David Moyes coming in, and maybe what they need to improve?
I'm not really sure. I know y'all were a little old in the midfield, and that was the biggest thing that I saw, that y'all were just, we ran, we played
because,
y'all.
Because we've got two guys close to 40.
and ironically, your best player was Giggs at points at the time of the season, so I mean, it was...
Yeah. Obviously, Ryan Giggs, I think, is he 40 or 41 in the
41.
Well, 39.
I think
he's 39 now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's 40 in November, and then Paul Scholes, 38, obviously mm-hmm. retired. Carrick's no spring chicken. I mean, he's 32, and
right.
I don't particularly rate him one of the best midfielders in the world, but carry on.
No, essentially, I mean, if you need to get younger in the midfield, that's your biggest thing. And then the Rooney saga, you just got to get that over with, figure out what's going on with y'all.
You can see, I mean, Mark touched on it, Chelsea and Arsenal reportedly interested in Wayne Rooney. You wouldn't think Manchester United would sell within the Premier League, would you? I mean, I can't even remember the last time that happened. To a major star, at least.
Yeah. Well, Berba.
Well, Berba. But Berbatov was on, to be fair, on the decline. Yeah. And obviously, Kevin would know very well, obviously, Berbatov. former Spurs man. But it doesn't happen that very often.
No.
Especially, I mean, Berbatov is... He's a great goal scorer, but he's not an elite. I mean, he's not a Wayne Rooney. As much as Wayne Rooney is unfulfilled, really. Would you sell Wayne Rooney? Would you get rid of him?
Not within the Premiership League. Even if the money was right, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it just to see him. I mean, you saw what Arsenal did. Arsenal sold Van Persie, and he just... blew up, and then, I mean, Arsenal sells all their stars, and what, they win trophies the next year? So...
Yeah, I mean, look at what Man City did to Arsenal three seasons ago.
Yeah.
Especially the top tier. I mean, that's where Rooney would want to go, but mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't want to sell him to a team that's already your rival. That's kind of trading
right.
within the U.S. sports context, trying mm-hmm. to... Cowboys trading their best stars to Eagles or Giants, and that's just... Having them pierce you would just be painful.
That's true. Now, obviously, Devin Moyes did say Rooney isn't for sale, but he stopped short of saying...
He is not going anywhere. He hasn't said anything.
He stopped short of saying he wants to leave. Because there was it's a bit of ambiguous thing where Sir Alex Ferguson at the end of last season said Wayne put in a a transfer request. Right. And then Wayne Rooney came out and said, that's not true. Or his representative said, it's not true.
And Al Moy said, I was not privy to that conversation. He is not for sale.
Yeah. So what do we read into that?
Moyes is stepping into a slot, and he's trying to make the best of a situation, trying to keep a player that he knows. I mean, Rio came out and said that Rooney's in the best shape that he's been in 5 years. So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Because Rooney, the last few seasons, has been on the heavy side. And the trainer, the United trainer, came out and he said if Rooney could be like Ronaldo if he had the same workout ethic Cristiano Ronaldo had to working out. I mean, there, I saw a small video of Cristiano Ronaldo topless at on a boat or something in Ibiza or wherever he was, Miami. The guy, his physique, I remember him when he was, it was before we won the Champions League. And the guy was thin, had firm musculature, but he did not have the arms or the lats that he has now. The guy has been working out. He is hard. Rooney, coming from a boxing background, he has that strong, square, cinder block body shape. Imagine if Rooney were to drop 15 pounds in adipose or fat tissue.
Be one hell of a player.
Ooh. Can you imagine his core and how fast he'd be? Because he's fast now. Those thighs, carrying that body. So
remains to be seen.
And it's going back to Moyes just trying to stroke Rooney's ego and saying, hey, I want him, just publicly making it known that, hey.
Backing him publicly.
Yeah,
right.
Saying, just stroking his legal ego and just saying, hey, we want you, you know? And even if it's not true, or even if it's just saying, it may just be public posture, but he's still doing it.
Yep. Last thing on the Manchester United segment. It was reported this week that Sir Alex Ferguson won't be attending the first few matches of the season because he's frightened, basically, of the television cameras of Manchester United play Chelsea, I think, in the first game.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea scored
second. Swansea has won.
That's right. Then Chelsea, I think, play Arsenal and
Liverpool
and Manchester City within, 5 weeks. He's frightened that Manchester United go one goal down. Cameras immediately go to his reaction in the stands. He doesn't want to undermine David Moyes. I guess that's a smart thing not to go. I mean, it's unfortunate, but it has to be done.
I think, you know, the guy is the master of the game, the psychological game. All the commentators would talk about Fergie time, or in the referee's ear, the referee,
mind games. Yes, and press conferences.
You know, so he's aware. He's aware, and the what I read I think yesterday was when Ferguson approached Moyes, he said he didn't say do you want to be.
Yeah,
he said you will be.
Yeah.
So the faith he has in the man is astounding. And you and I have talked about this 2 seasons ago before you moved back home.
Mm.
We were talking about who's going to take Fergie's place. And Moyes back then was one of the guys. And Moyes has been one of the guys that people talked about other than Pep and Jose and at some point Steve Bruce. And
An ex-Manchester United player.
Yes. Moyes has his faith, absolute faith. The work ethic, they come from a similar background in Glasgow, the same working parents. Everything is so similar. So I think that Ferguson is doing this is just saying he has my faith, let him run the squad. So I think it's the perfect play.
A quick prediction. I know we're looking beyond the future. Manchester United, where they're coming next season under David Moyes.
Mm-hmm.
Put your head instead of your heart, please, Mark.
head. Unfortunately, I think two.
You think second?
Yep. I think Chelsea, this is, we talked about this one of the last couple of times I was on.
Yeah.
I think Chelsea is going to put the piece together under Jose, and I think two in the league. I'd like to. He's got to win some trophies, so I'm assuming he's going to go for the FA. He's going to go for the league, and he's going to try and get Champions League, but I don't see that really happening. So I think second in the league and Carling Cup, because we play Wigan.
I was talking to Kevin before the show. I think this might be the time when Manchester United slip out the top three. Unfortunately, I don't want to say it, but I think that might just happen. If it's going to happen,
out of the top three.
We haven't finished outside the top three since the Premier League started in 1992-93.
So,
but I think if there's any time that it would happen, it'll be this season, because we've talked about the unpredictable, the new managers, a lot of money going in. If Manchester United don't improve that midfield, I agree, you're going to struggle. I don't. Leighton Baines is a great player. Is he that much of an improvement on Evra? Well, not really, and not in the position.
Pace.
Okay, with pace, but he's not the position that would win us games necessarily. Maybe let in less goals, but if Chelsea is spending money, Tottenham that we're about to talk about, spending money, Manchester City spending money, even Arsenal have just bought Higuain. Mm. If Manchester United don't, plug the hole in midfield, I think we could really struggle next season. So we'll see.
So who do you see above them?
I think Chelsea will win the league, but I said that last year. I think Chelsea will win the league. I'll go with Manchester City, because I think Pellegrini is an outstanding coach.
Yes.
And I think, depending on if Tottenham get the players that they want, they could push, especially if they get Leandro Damião.
For third?
I think so. I think Manchester United might struggle next year. I really do. I'm just putting it out there. I think I say we could finish outside the top three. I'll say we finish third. With Tottenham finally coming fourth.
Hey, we did it in 2010.
And maybe Arsenal coming fifth, although Arsenal obviously have just signed Higuain.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't call it, but that's why I say this might be the year that Manchester United really struggled. On to Kevin's team, Tottenham Hotspur. We spoke about Paulinho, 17 million. Good signing, obviously. We'll play with Sandro in the centre of midfield. Mm-hmm. You have Bale, you have Lennon.
Dembele.
Sigerson, Dempsey. I mean, you got midfield that Manchester United would love to have at this point in time. How do you think it's shaping up? And what do you guys need to do in order to finally come above Arsenal, or at least again in the Champions League positions?
Striker. I mean, you all know it. We all know it. We can't have Bale being our main goal scorer. I mean, he can. He can't. We saw it last year. We witnessed it last year. He can come in on the left side and shoot a rocket at any point outside the box. But we need a striker. This Defoe, I mean, even Spurs have been clamoring this ever since last year's transfer window in September.
But it looks like Adebayor, you really gone only have to, two. It's going to Beşiktaş in Turkey.
It's going to Turkey. And then Defoe is apparently, he got rumored yesterday or today to Stoke, which is...
To link up with Peter Crouch, Hughes. Mark Hughes loves to spend money and... not the best coach in the world, but I mean, what are Spurs going to do? I mean, the Damião link has kind of been
I was reading right now that he's apparently linked to Southampton and Napoli or something. I mean, it's all in the know right now, so it's all just crap. But essentially, what would be my ultimate, because we only have two strikers. I mean, everyone else is the attacking midfielder, a winger, so we only have two true strikers. Now, I've read a couple, we've been linked to Mario Gomez, which for 20 million, I wouldn't pay 20 million for Mario Gomez.
But I mean, he did score
No. 56 no,
goals. But, I mean, if you look, who's beating
Gomez, Gomez is going to be like another Adebayor. Yeah.
You think so?
Look who's feeding him out of that Bayern Munich midfield, and attacking options all across the board, and he poaches. So you have Robin hitting the post, and then he just comes in and poaches it in. So he's not worth 20 million. So, I mean, if they ever bring price down, we would
and
take a look.
And Matias Zama said he wants to go to Fiorentina. Yeah, there is no other team. He wants to go to Fiorentina. So Gomez is out. I think that'd be a bad buy. If Spurs are going to buy a striker, dude, get someone that will do the work and put the ball in the net.
And we're willing to David Villa right now. That's our strongest link right now, and I like that a lot. Even though he's coming off injury,
he broke his leg. He is 31.
But we need someone right now to perform. We can't.
He is a marquee signing, a proven winner, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't mind paying $20 million for that. I mean, even though he's coming off injury, I wouldn't mind throwing those wages. But Spurs usually are a team that don't pay the. We usually have a pretty hard wage schedule, so we got Levy to open up our pocketbook for Paulinho, but getting him to open up our pocketbook more for David Villa, a player who does have, I mean, he's a proven goal scorer, but he also does have some injury concerns. But we still have that. We sell JD. If we keep Defoe, which would be a good, both have their perks. Adebayor, his mind may not be in the game sometimes. But he's a good hold-up player. He's a good hold-up player, and he holds the ball for Bale or Dempsey to come up, and he's a better passer. Whereas Defoe depends more on outrunning the players at the end of the game.
Right.
So both have their shortcomings. Both are... We have to pick the lesser of the two demons.
What about the idea of... Gareth Bale's having a lot of comparisons with Cristiano Ronaldo. What about moving Bale more centrally? I mean, it did happen at various points. He played in the hole.
Right. Well... It could work, but also AVB's style is 4-3-3. So, I mean, we already know our midfield right now. I mean, when Sandro comes back full 100% in October, although he's planning to come back in August, but I think his pure fitness will be in October. I mean, you have Dembele, Sandro, and Paulinho in the three in the middle. And then up top, if we still keep, we'll still have Lennon, Bale, and then whoever we can place in the middle, be it a David Villa.
Well, if Jermaine Defoe stays.
Jermaine Defoe stays. Those three. But right now, that's our main preferred. That's Villabolas' preferred formation. So right now, which we did last year, we moved Bale to the center. And we'd usually put Sigurdsson or someone on the sides. And they would kind of play off of each other on that end.
What about someone like Christian Benteke? I mean, has been rumored with Spurs before. But you guys think he'd be a good
signing? I like him. He's on my wish list. Remember the first podcast? He was on my wish list when we talked about Bale going to Madrid, if that was going to happen. He is on my wish list. But I don't know if they'll sell him to us. It'll be a tough buy. I mean, we could buy. But, I mean... It's just it all revolves around Daniel Levy opening his checkbook and us breaking our weight schedule.
Yeah,
which...
but I think the value that was put on his head was 30, and there's no way that they're gonna come in. Yes, that's absurd.
I mean, we won't pay 20 million for. I mean, if we were Man City and we just wanted to open our pocketbooks and just have Emirates give us more money, we could buy Mario Gomez just for 20 million. Mm. But I mean, we're not, and that's just not our style. Because, I mean, like you said, we still have that history of being a selling club. But we're also just very rigid on our wage schedule.
I mean, Benteke's wages wouldn't be particularly high,
No, but it would still be that. I mean, who do we sell? Who have we sold? We'll sell. Right now, we're rumored to sell Parker to QPR for 2 mil.
Well, Adebayor's wages are 100 grand plus a week. Yeah. I mean, Benteke's, is that going to be more than 45, 50? I wouldn't have thought, no? I'm a young guy.
I don't know. I have no idea about his wages, but that's trying to come in. I think I read this morning about what the strategy might be is to wait till the end of the window and then come in for 20.
I mean, Levy's style, isn't it? To wait till the last minute to bid for players. Sometimes,
but then
works,
he does that, and then we don't get. I mean, we'll get the pearls, the Van de Vaart, we'll get those, but then we'll also get nothing to show for. As showed entirely last year with Ademio until the last minute in January. That was just the big news, and then it just all fell apart. So, I don't know. We've been linked with Demio for a year and a half now. Yeah. I mean, four transfer periods now, so it's just been.
Yeah, it's getting. It's now or never.
That's like United and Snyder. Yeah. Yes. No. Next season. Yes. No. Yeah. No.
I'm still holding out hope. Never gonna happen now. Unfortunately. That's almost like Spurs and Gian Mourinho. Mm-hmm. A few transfer, obviously that.
Yeah, that got really close. And he got really close in January apparently. So.
And then he's obviously gonna be playing with Monaco now. Last one on this, I think I'd rather spend 20 million on Benteke than 20 million on David Villa. I mean, Benteke's what, 23? David Villa's 31, more injury problems, and Benteke's proven it in the Premier League.
You also have.
Do you remember Henrik Larsson?
Oh, beautiful player.
Okay. Yes. Do you remember when we bought him?
Okay. But he didn't score that many goals, but he was a great player. Well, Spurs need goals to help to Gareth Bale. So
with
it's slightly different.
Villa, what do you have? You have a guy that comes from Barcelona. His head says, I can. I will. He has it with Barcelona. Well, he has it with Spain.
With Valencia, obviously, before Barcelona, too.
The guy has a history. This is the mentality, the mental part of the game. If your belief system is based on other players getting you the ball or almost getting you the ball, you're thinking, if they just get me the ball, I could. If they will just give me the ball, I can put it in the net. Villa has, they will get me the ball. I will put it in the net. They will. I have to put myself here. They will get it to me. He has that. That's the difference. Benteke doesn't have that.
Okay.
Not yet.
So for you guys, Kevin, you'd rather have Benteke or David Villa for 20 million? Mark, too?
Same.
I implore everybody, go to the Facebook group, On the Ball Soccer Podcast. Go to our Twitter, at On the Ball Show. And we'll put it to a vote. Because I think most people, even if they aren't Spurs fans, would rather spend 20 million... when Christian Benteke, when he's, I believe he's 23, might even be 22, proven in the Premier League, lower wages, I think you'd rather spend 20 million on him than 20 million on David Villa. Although brilliant, I think he's only two goals behind Torres in Spain's all-time leading goal scorer, proven winner, but he has got slight injury problems. He is 31. He does have the winning mentality, though, as Mark eloquently described. But I think most people would agree with me. And we're going to see. And then we'll review it next week, and we will see. So
I mean, those are all the points for Benteke. It's just,
well, I gave good points for Villa, too. I thought it was quite a weighted.
I just don't. Right at this level, I want a proven winner. And Benteke is a proven scorer. He's not a proven winner. And we need... That Bale clock is ticking. Every minute right now, every second, you can see Madrid just... getting another loan from the government of Spain just to afford him. You know? So.
Or the Glazers are going to the bank to try and get some money.
I would love that.
That's the dream for Manchester United.
More than Ronaldo.
Ronaldo?
Absolutely, yes. I would rather have Bale.
You know, there's a joke. How do you spell gigs in the 21st century? B-A-L-E.
Well, with him as player coach, they've got the Welsh squad background.
Yeah,
I mean,
they do.
You know he's got an ego. You know Giggs has an ego. Can you imagine him?
Well,
and he is being groomed to be the next man.
Yeah.
So
perhaps so.
Can you imagine Giggs being able to mentor full time?
Gareth Bale. It's a tantalizing prospect.
My mouth is watering.
Kevin has nightmares about that situation. we're going to quickly take a 5-minute break, and we'll be back. This is On the Ball. Welcome back to the On the Ball podcast, live from the Londoner in Addison. Just been told quickly to plug the Twitter feed. It's at On the Ball Show. And then on Facebook, it's On the Ball Soccer Podcast, and that's where you can vote Jake being right that Benteke is worth 20 million and David Villa isn't. Or you can argue with me, which many people do, especially about someone called Neymar. We're back. 10 years of Roman Abramovich, Chelsea owner. He's changed the English Premier League dramatically. I think we can all agree it's 10 years, 10 different managers. He's even gone through so many that he's bringing one back.
Is it only 10?
It's only, well, Mourinho counts as double. Double because double because his ego's so big, and then double because he's back for a second time.
How many managers lasted less than 12 months?
Oh.
And see, all of them. Oh, see, I think all of them. Yeah, all of them, because they just lasted 9 months.
All of them.
Yeah, nine months is a season. Essentially,
the only one who probably did was Ancelotti. Probably lasted more than 12 months.
Did he? I thought he came in mid-season.
He won the double.
Gus Hiddink
came.
How many times did he come in?
I think he came once. But I mean, we'll quit just for shits and giggles. We'll do a bit of world play. I'll name a Chelsea manager within the 10 years. Then Kevin, then Mark, and we'll go around and see if we can do all 10. So I'll start with. He didn't. Abramovich didn't appoint him, but Claudio Ranieri won.
Oh, yeah.
Got to the Champions League semi-final with Chelsea when they were beaten by Monaco.
And got tossed.
And then got sacked. And he was much, much loved. He's now the Monaco manager, funny enough, how things change. Kevin, next one.
So we'll just go with the most recent one, Carlo Ancelotti. He got made, what, did he run the double, or didn't he?
He won the Premier League and won the FA Cup.
And then he won the Europa Cup this past year.
Oh, you're talking about the Europa? You're talking about Rafa Benitez.
Oh, yeah, Rafa. Sorry, I was confused. Sorry. Playing all that. So he won the double, Ancelotti's double, and now he is on his way.
He's at Real Madrid?
Yeah, he's on his way to Real Madrid. He was at PSG last year, now he's on his way to
Real Madrid. That's right. He's won the league in England. First season in England, first season in France, first season in Italy. Might do it with Spain. So Carlo Ancelotti, there's two. Mark, number three.
Benitez.
Rafa Benitez.
The
the guy who the Chelsea fans hated, and he won the Europa League.
Yes, and turned it around. That's a story. I actually interviewed him when he came here with Inter to play FC Dallas. Really soft-spoken guy. interesting character. I mean, as a fan, he seems almost spineless and insecure. What I've heard about him is that he's a tactician more than a strategist. Yeah. I mean, telling his players in detail what he expects them to do.
Well, he did brilliantly when Liverpool coach. He outsmarted Mourinho numerous times in the Champions League semi-final.
Yep.
He won the Champions League with Liverpool.
And he won the Champions League with Liverpool. That's exactly. He actually made two finals with Liverpool. Obviously, they were beaten by AC Milan the second time around. 2 years later, after Benitez, who's now the Napoli manager, doing a bit of informing people where everyone is now. After Rafa Benitez, I'm going to say Roberto Di Matteo. So obviously, the holy grail for Roman Abramovich was the Champions League. Di Matteo comes in as Chelsea boss, interim boss, the first interim boss, and wins the Champions League. After I won't say his name, current Tottenham manager, pissed his chance away, and they were losing to Napoli, obviously in the Champions League, and then Di Matteo wins the Champions League. So there's four.
That was really unfortunate for him too.
For Di Matteo to get sacked.
No.
Oh, you're talking about
the
next guy. Who? What's his name? Kevin, in case people don't know. What's the Spurs manager? Andre Villas-Boas?
Yeah, Andre Villas-Boas.
I mean, he was unlucky. Young coach, obviously, coming in.
Yes.
And look at the other people. Look at all the players he signed before we got into that. Just kind of I mean.
Exactly. I mean, the guy was a smart guy. I think that Chelsea dressing room is just some big egos, and you got to be a strong, strong guy to handle it. And it really surprised me that Benitez did as well as he did with that squad. So,
after Andre Villas-Boas, obviously now at Spurs,
the Dutchman.
Who's next? Gus Hiddink.
Gus Hiddink, yep.
Who took over and then won the FA Cup with Chelsea. Who's now? Is he still at Angie? I think he's still at Angie.
Millenstein joined him. Rene Meulensteen from the United manager.
That's right, the first team coach. Yeah. Rene Meulensteen, yeah, has left to join Gus Hiddink. Angie, FA Cup winner with Chelsea. And there's always rumours every time Roman Abramovich does sack a coach that he's going to bring Gus Hiddink back. Next one. Talked about him a bit earlier. Did you say Parcells? The Parcells of the soccer world. Luis Felipe Scolari. Just won the Confederations Cup with Brazil.
Big Phil.
Big Phil is another of Roman's victims. Bit the bullet, didn't pay off. He was there for under 9 months, I think, even at Chelsea. After Scolari, could you name another one? I think we're on six. We got four more to go. Well, Mourinho counts as Mourinho. We haven't named Mourinho, but he counts as double. So really, we have three left.
It's Mourinho.
Dang.
Damn, could you name them all? People listening at home probably can name one and be like, what's going on?
I don't even West could name all.
West, where are you? Okay, well, Mourinho obviously coming back for his second term.
Right.
We've all predicted, well, that he'll be successful. I've said maybe he might...
But you just said he's going to win earlier.
Well, I think he will, yeah. But yeah. I think there's a chance. I mean, you can't be successful all of the time. Even Ferguson. There's going to be a blip every so often. And look, clearly, Mourinho wasn't successful there by the end of his tenure, the first time around. Lost to Rosenberg, I think that was there. Well, they drew against Norwegian side Rosenberg, and that's why he was ousted.
Avram Grant.
Oh, Avram Grant.
Oh, the Israeli.
Yep. Okay. Pulling it up on Wikipedia just to pull it up.
The former technical director of Maccabi Haifa, I think, in Israel. Or Tel Aviv.
Such a smart man. Yeah. I'd love to see him back in the EPL.
Really? But English, the media hate him. They think he's a plum. That's what we would say.
But I think he's the understated, quiet guy that gets the job done.
You think so?
Yes. The guy is a smart, smart man. And I think he did not get the respect that he should have gotten.
I agree. I mean, he failed at West Ham. I believe he got them relegated.
Yeah.
I think he's more of a technical director rather than a coach or a manager. But certainly, you can't really be a village idiot and manage Chelsea. I mean, who else is on the list? Bob Avram Grant.
Ray
Wilkins.
Oh, Ray. Well, okay. Ray Wilkins was the assistant for Ancelotti, and then he took over, and then was fired. Former Chelsea, former Manchester United player, now works for Sky Sports. Good pundit, and that's it. To go over Abramovich's reign, has he been good for Chelsea? He bought them for, I think it was $300 million. At the time, and
do you remember what Chelsea was before he came on? Chelsea was not.
I don't think I'd seen a Chelsea shirt in Dallas. I mean, at that point, now.
No.
Oh, that's a shout out to West.
I remember. I remember when was it? They had the Icelandic guy. What's his name?
Oh, Gudjonsson. Ida Gudjonsson.
Ida Gudjonsson. They had the.
Well, they
the Dutch striker.
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
And they were.
They were a decent team.
They were close, but they were never ever that. They were what Everton is now.
I agree. They were like a fifth, sixth best team. Yeah. But as we all know in the English Premier League, the gap between, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, really a gigantic leap, especially for the top four. Although nowadays it's becoming a bit more. Stretched out. So
Chelsea before he came and poured that money in was not much. And then they bought some amazing play, and the best buy they ever had.
Oh, that's a good one.
The best buy, I think, was Drogba. Drogba was a beast. Him and Cech, before Cech was injured. Peter Cech
before the head injury
was beautiful.
Yeah. And he was still young back then. I think he was 25 at the time.
Yeah.
Kevin, what do you think about Abramovich's his 10-year reign as the owner of of Chelsea Football Club.
It's never been boring. I mean, we're talking about it now. I mean, who else are we talking about right now? I mean, haven't. I mean, Mark was saying, he's brought Chelsea into the conversation, whereas we're not talking about some other middling, mid-level team. I mean, even Liverpool, look where Liverpool is right now. So, I mean...
Would you say that his what if I put it to you, the two biggest contributions Abramovich has made has been that he was really, if you think about it, and all soccer fans listening to this probably agree with me, more so than the Benteke and Neymar thing, Abramovich was the first foreign owner that was to take over a club and pump vast sums of money. I mean, nowadays in Spain we've seen it, okay, with Malaga, although that's kind of waning now. We've seen it with PSG and Monaco in France. With Manchester City in the Premier League. Whereas Abramovich was really the first person to do that and completely changed the landscape of not only British football, but the Premier League, but European football.
Well, the uncertainty that he brought to the table. I mean, the meddling that he did. I mean, we talked about it's not Arshavin. Who's the Russian? The Ukraine? Shevchenko.
Oh, Shevchenko. Andrei Shevchenko.
When he made him buy it.
And then Torres.
$50 million for Torres. Yeah.
Yes, that was him.
Yeah.
I would be so angry by having the dude that's paying the check, writing the check. Telling me what I'm going to do when that doesn't follow the strategy that I'm trying to follow to make his club successful.
And I agree with you. I think what happened was his ego just got too big where he saw how much he's won, and even all the managers we saw go through.
Isn't that his right, though? I mean, if you're the owner and you've spent
we've seen how it works out with Jerry Jones and with our own hometown.
There's a big difference with NFL and the Premier League.
But I mean, he's still spending money on the players he wants that he knows can sell jerseys. So Jerry Jones is picking players that he wants.
Here's the difference between that. And
salary cap outside.
Here's the difference, I think. And this is point two after the first foreign owner thing. Second one is he's proven the exception of the rule. And the rule was if you have stability, you win. We've seen it Sir Alex Ferguson, 26 years. Okay, Arsenal with Arsene Wenger in the past 8 years. Haven't won anything, but they've been competing. And before that, they were winning Premier Leagues or reaching Champions League finals. 10 managers, 10 years, and yet how much have they won? A Champions League, numerous FA Cups, numerous Premier Leagues. That's the exception.
I agree with you on that, but at the manager level, but how you look at the core players from 2003 when he first came in to essentially when Drogba left, what was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at all the core players. There's a couple of little fill-ins there and out, coming in and out. But, I mean,
You're talking about the Czechs, the Ashley Coles, the Lampards, Terrys, and then obviously Drogba.
The core was always there. I mean, even though there was turning over managers, we turned toilet paper over, but...
I agree with Mark. I think Drogba was probably the best signing. Second best signing, if not equal best signing, was Makélélé. Without doubt, Claude Makélélé was you know, we talk about the defensive midfielder position. We talk about Sandro and Paulinho. We talk about Manchester United needing that Roy Keane figure. I mean, in many ways, Arsenal have missed Patrick Vieira. But who was the first real guy? It was Makélélé. And for all Real Madrid fans that I tend to argue with a lot, the reason why Real Madrid haven't won the Champions League for so long is because after they last won it, they got rid of their best midfielder, which was Makélélé, you know? That's his position. Defensive midfielder is the Makélélé role. So I would say he's up there with Drogba, but he was an early signing, obviously.
Right.
A lot earlier.
I think Abramovich was the beginning of the real, the truest form of the buying a trophy.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, City came in and did the same thing. They replicated it, and they did it. PSG did it last season. It's the coming in, blowing cash, and taking over. Monaco is going to try and do it.
But then they can't do it the year after, so next year, right. So they can do it this year, yes. And just blow all their cash.
Yeah, right. if FFP for next year,
this is where the top clubs, this is where Abramovich and City and all of those clubs that are having that influx of cash, they've got their lawyers combing through the FIFA wordage, finding loopholes. And that's you know, I talked earlier about the dive that Spain took for the Confederations Cup, and my friend saying that, well, somebody they took a dive. I actually played soccer with a guy whose brother was on the El Salvador national squad years ago, and he said that they were going to Mexico to play in a World Cup qualifier, and they were told they were going to lose on the flight.
Wow.
This is how the game is going to go, and basically they were given an overview of the way that they play, the score, and the loss, and what they would receive. Wow. So, it's unfortunate to hear that, but the guy had no reason to lie to me.
Yeah.
Because we were at the time talking about Zepp Blatter. And you know, it's
the corruption and so forth.
Yeah. The corruption is that's why the African squads have such a hard time. I mean, look at Nigeria not getting on the plane to Brazil.
Yeah, originally, that's right.
We're not gonna play if we don't get our money. The corruption that happens, it's not really in the media, and it's certainly not in the media here in the States.
Yeah.
But the tribal politics that happen in African football are shameful.
Yeah.
But you see it all over the world. And if it happens at that level, I mean, we've seen the corruption that has taken place in Italy 6 years ago with Juventus.
With Juventus getting demoted, that's right.
Yes.
And then AC Milan selling them all them out, but everyone was in on it. The top five clubs.
So we saw that in Italy. We've seen it in Thailand. We've seen it in China. We saw it in Germany.
We've seen it in Turkey's the new big one as well. Obviously, yes. Fenerbahce are not allowed in European competition, right. I think, for 2 years. They're appealing it, of course.
Right. So there's a lot that's happening, and I'd like to say that it doesn't really happen, but there's got to be too much money that comes from gambling and all of that.
Before we go, just the Monaco. I mean, all the Monaco with all the third party. I mean, there's just a lot of money on a lot of people's hands that.
Yep.
It's just too appetizing to not get that cash.
I mean, speaking about young players and money. Back to Chelsea, they signed Van Ginkel, who played for the under 21s Netherlands, and Schürrle. Is that how you pronounce it? You
Schürrle.
German.
Yep.
German striker. You can also play left midfield. Buying a lot of young players, Chelsea. I guess this is Abramovich when he came in.
Building of the future.
Yeah, Abramovich came in and he bought established stars, the McAlellys, the Crespos.
Right.
Those kind of players. Whereas they've now... Crespo wasn't there. Varane. Probably the... actually, there's been a lot of bad Chelsea signings. But Varane was pretty bad. He was failed at Manchester United and certainly failed at Chelsea. Building for the future, though. Hazard, Oscar, Van Ginkel, Schürrle.
Luis.
It's going to be pretty good. Think next year frighteningly good. The reign of Roman Abramovich looks set to continue, and
he probably has a good 3 years of trophies, because Hazard, Mata's 25,
yeah,
Hazard early 20s, Schürrle early 20s. It's
Luis, early 20s.
Oscar's 20.
Oscar's 20.
Charles, I think 22.
And those guys, that play, that's what Barcelona and Spain perfected. Mm. What Bayern and Dortmund were able to take advantage of. I mean, it's that style of play is going to win matches because they've got basically six attackers, five permanent attackers.
All they need is a proper striker.
Yep.
poor Fernando Torres. Anyway, quickly on an American striker, Jose Altidore. Is it going to be second time lucky? He's just left AZ Alkmaar in the Eredivisie, which is the top division in the Netherlands. He's going to Sunderland. Played for Hull. I think I looked it up earlier. It was like 3 goals in 25 games. Yeah, it was awful.
But
he's older now. He's 23. He's obviously putting a bit of bulk. He scored goals for fun in Holland.
That's the mentality that I was talking about earlier. He now I think he should have stayed another season to reinforce that, to really prove to himself that it wasn't just one season. But he has now the mentality, the confidence, and it's really twofold. The belief, the hope that you can. The belief that you can, and then the knowledge that you can. That's what he has now. But he doesn't have it for a second season, and that's unfortunate.
Maybe to make up to make up for that, he does have Paolo Di Canio, who was a great forward in his time, a very great mental guy. He's mental in terms of motivation, and mental in terms of he's got a few wires loose.
Yes, he does.
But that might help, Jose Altidore. I mean, we hope for the U.S. national team's sake that he does well in the Premier League.
Well, Di Canio attempted to turn Sunderland from a physical Stoke-style play to something more technical. And I think he achieved a bit of that right after he came, not so much at the end of the season, because they lost a few matches
end. That just not a new manager? New manager comes in, they always have that little bounce.
Right, right.
So maybe it was... it's a big crucial season for Sunderland and Altidore. If Altidore was to fail, Kevin, do you think... I mean, what does that do for his career? Does he go back to Holland or come back to the MLS? Or, I mean, he's still young. I think he's 23.
I think if he gets 8 to 10 goals, that's amazing. That's season. He gets 8 to 10 goals, and that's just an amazing season. But, I mean, he can get it. He's not going to be the lone up striker, lone striker up front with I forget who the midfielder was playing, was feeding him the balls.
Sunderland? You mean
Sessignon? No, not Sunderland. No,
AZ Alkmaar?
Yeah. I forget his name, but he was feeding him the balls. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. He was feeding beautiful balls to Altidore all the time. So I think Altidore going to Sunderland, not being the main striker. He's not going to be the main striker, and like he was over there. He will be the second. If he gets 8 to 10 goals, that's a successful season. I think that's what he's going to get. He's going to get that range, and from there he can build up. Now, if he does get his 3 goals or 4 goals again, then I don't know if his ego will take a hit because he's a little bit older and he already knows, coming back from Hull, how to handle the disappointment.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a big season for Sunderland, and the pressure's going to be on him. And, well, he's performed in the United States national team, beat it against CONCACAF opponents. And he's been full form. Can he carry that on? I think so. My prediction, 8 to 10 goals.
8 to 10 goals, Mark, your prediction? 8 to 10 goals?
I think you're right. I think that if he does that, it will be a successful season for him. I'd have to see what Sunderland do with their squad, but the guy is a... He's a powerful player. I don't think he's as technical as Lukaku, but he's got the same kind of bill or Sturridge. I think that he needs to work on his technical game a little bit more. But once he does that, I think he'll be a hot player, and it'll influence the U.S. play as well.
Moving on to another. I agree with both of you, by the way. 8 to 10 goals be a great season for Altidore, especially because he failed miserably. First time around, but I also agree. I think he should have stayed in Holland for another year. From Altidore to Edu, Freddie Edu, I was asked on my Facebook about Freddie Edu and what he was up to. Bit of history, obviously he was 14 years old, he turned professional. The rumor was he could have turned professional when he was 12. Here's the story with Freddie Edu. It's an unofficial thing that when he was born in Ghana with a Ghanaian mother who won a green card application to come to the US. And I don't know the legal technicalities, but your child needs to be under a certain age in order for them to get a green card. I think it's like under the age of 16. And the rumor is, and obviously rumors happen in all walks of life, the rumor was when Freddie Edu was 14, really he was 17, 18, you know, the youngest was 16. So obviously when he's 14 and he's playing against other 14-year-olds, well, he's really 18 or 17, well, he's obviously going to be a lot more further developed, and he'll obviously still be a good player, but he'll outplay everybody. And the feeling is, as he got older, well, there's a bigger difference between 17 and 14 than there is between 20 and 23. So he obviously was with DC United. He then went to, I think, Real Salt Lake in MLS. He then went out to Benfica in Portugal, didn't really play. Then played for Monaco, didn't play. Then went to Greece. Then went to the second division in Turkey. Spent a trial, I think it was a month trial at Manchester United. Wasn't offered a deal.
Came back to
the MLS with Philadelphia Union, I believe. He's now playing for a team in Brazil called, I hope I don't butcher their name, I think it's called Bahia.
B-A-H-I-A.
And he's still not playing. He's, I think, believe it or not, he's only like 24 or 23 still. So it's pretty remarkable. But he's not getting game time in Brazil.
I think it was the perfect.
Unfortunately, it's a tell.
That's the perfect example of abuse. I mean, I remember when he first came out, and it doesn't matter if you're 14 or 18.
Well, yeah, I think it was $10 million contract from Nike or something, even higher,
but,
maybe.
But it's they said he is the savior of U.S. soccer.
He's the American Pelé. You know that people were saying
and. That is the perfect example of abuse of a player. I mean, the guy was put out on too big a stage, way too early, and that's the ignorance of those leaders of the, not just the club, but MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, that was complete ignorance on their part. That's the American mentality of the quarterback is going to save the day.
Yeah.
How many great hero stories are there of American quarterbacks? Well, none of them were 14 or even 17.
Yeah.
So they abused that player, and this is unfortunately the fallout. Yeah. He's not doing anything.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because he needs games, and everywhere he goes, doesn't get the games. I have just sacked their coach, by the way. They have a new coach, so he gets another chance. Listening to my favorite soccer journalist, this guy called Tim Vickery, and he interviewed the departing coach at Bahia, and he asked him, what do you think of Freddie Edu? And the former coach described Freddie Edu as a saw. That if you're one-on-one with Freddie Edu and he has the ball, he'll go left, he'll go right, he'll go left, he'll go right, like a saw going up and down, but he doesn't really go anywhere. That's how this coach described him. So a guy with I guess technical skill, but in terms of progression,
stunted.
Just completely stunted. Now whether it's that age thing that I talked the unofficial thing, or whether it's just the simple fact that this guy just cannot get games. I mean, Benfica was a huge club, mm-hmm. I mean, European star, and
couldn't make it there.
Couldn't make it there. So it's very unfortunate. Quick note on Janinho, if New York Red Bulls terminated his contract, obviously a huge star, Brazilian star, played for Leon. I guess he's more remembered for his incredible free kicks from ridiculous, ridiculous ranges. signed for the Red Bulls, and he was so awful they terminated his contract. So it looks like he said he's going to go back to Brazil, probably with Vasco da Gama, and have one more year and that kind of thing. In all fairness, he was kind of played out of position for the Red Bulls. He was made to be a defender, and really he was attacking. But he was 39. At this point of his career, he's won, you know, proven winner in France. I think he was part of the Lyon team that won 7 back-to-back French titles.
And you know what? If you just let him do, he's one of those guys that if you just let him do what he does, you'll be fine. If you can take advantage of it, if you've got the team to build around him. But
At this stage of his career, making him turning him into an attacking midfielder, no matter how old he is, and making him defend.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't need the money. He'd rather rather leave. I was asked about World Cup tickets. Go on sale in August. You can get them on the FIFA website or in Brazil. How it works is pretty sure it's the same standard that they do in all FIFA competitions. Basically, it's a lottery. You go onto the FIFA website and you bid using basically your credit card for certain games. Now, you can either choose to follow a certain team or you can choose to stay in one city. But basically, you bid for the tickets in terms of category seats. So from, like, I guess the cheap seats to the medium price seats to the high-end seats. But you don't know what games you get or what cities you get necessarily. And then basically they offer them to you and you have, like, I think it's like a 12-hour period to accept the lottery, the luck of the draw that you were given. They go on sale in August. Because of all the chaos in Brazil during the Confederations Cup, which we actually didn't touch on, FIFA have come out and said, well, these will be the cheapest World Cup tickets ever. That remains to be seen. Because Brazil, obviously, third largest economy in the world, so it's not the cheapest place really right now.
No, it's not. It's really expensive.
I mean, and quickly about the chaos in Brazil is that all these stadiums are paid for by the people with taxes. Now, some of these stadiums, only 6 were used in the Confederations Cup, 12 will be used for the World Cup. The problem is some of these stadiums are in the most obscure places in Brazil where they don't even have a professional team. So who's going to play in the stadium?
Well,
who's going to maintain it? The public are going to have to maintain a stadium that isn't even used.
How long ago was the China Olympics?
2008, so 5 years.
Okay.
5 years now, yeah.
A couple of years ago, or I'll say a year ago, I was scrolling through somewhere, and it was maybe a Yahoo article about the state of all of these things that China built for the Olympics. The kayaking, the slalom course, it's
baseball, softball, all that across the board.
Overgrown, dilapidated, falling
apart. Saw a couple of dogs and they're running around. Yeah. I've seen those. I see which article you're talking about.
So, the Brazilian public has, and everybody knows now that it's not really a moneymaker. This thing happening, the World Cup, is not a moneymaker for a country. It's a loss.
Yeah.
But it's a prestige thing. So if you can't really afford it,
well, it's a loss if you have to start from pretty much the ground up and bring all these stadiums, where if it was an England, for an example, well, it wouldn't be lost.
Who?
Some island.
some island.
In Northern Europe. Where there's all those stadiums already built, the infrastructure, so nothing really would be. So unless you're ready for the World Cup, if you have to start from the ground up, like Brazil did, really.
South Africa.
I mean, it's very difficult to make money from it. And you're right, this chaos in Brazil, it's going to be even worse at the World Cup. It's going to be all these protests and stuff.
I actually have some Brazilian friends, and we talked about this. And they are wealthy down in Brazil.
Yeah.
But they all said that it's really expensive to go there. It's inexpensive, because the dollar to the I can't remember what the Brazilian currency is, but the dollar to that is decent. But the money that you spend the to have an apartment is almost what it is here.
Yeah.
The dollar per hour pay that you get is minimal. She said that all of her friends in their apartments there have someone that comes in and cleans because you can afford it.
Mm.
But it's going to be expensive to visit there, I think.
I mean, yeah, it's going to be expensive. I'm going to try and make out the trip to get there. Rio Carnival during the World Cup should be good. I think it's my advice would be, I went to the World Cup in South Africa. Obviously the Olympics, I was there in London, and the European Championships in Austria and Switzerland in 2008 and in 2004 in Portugal. My advice is to stick to a city. So if you're going to be in Brazil, obvious, stick to Rio or something, somewhere like that, and just go to the games in that city. Remember, the distances between places in Brazil are gigantic.
Yeah.
So that can't be understated. And I think that's about it. Producer Gio, have a good time today.
Yes, sir.
So, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
I know. Thanks,
Mark,
again.
Thank you, especially for wearing the shirt. I should wear my Manchester United
jersey. Go Red Devils.
Go Red Devils. We'll see. Thank you, guys. Remember, at On The Ball Show for our Twitter feed, On The Ball Soccer Podcast on Facebook. Check out and review the Podomatic website or us on iTunes. Give us a review. Give us a comment. We're live from the London and Addison. And we will see you next week. Thank you.
Is this their moment? Beckham. Into Sheringham. And Solskjaer has won it!
We're on the ball. We're on the ball. We're on the ball. We're on the ball.
We're on the ball. We're on the ball. We're on the ball. Even though we're small. We're on the ball.
Can I have the ball back?